As more information about Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi's brazen murder at the hands of the Saudi government comes to light, FAIR analyst Adam Johnson called attention to a little-acknowledged media trope used to prop up the mythology of the U.S. as a noble protector of democracy and human rights. Despite wars of aggression, spying regimes, the funding and arming of right-wing militias, and the propping up of dictators. And that's the idea that the U.S. political class does bad things, not because bad things serve U.S. imperial interests, but because they're corrupted by sinister foreign actors. In a report on why Khashoggi's killing was unlikely to fundamentally alter the U.S.-Saudi relationship, NBC News on October 17th explained that, quote, Adam Kugel, a Middle East researcher with Human Rights Watch, said the longstanding economic and security ties with Saudi Arabia have forced the U.S. to tolerate a lot of questionable Saudi behavior, close quote. It's unclear if those were Kugel's words or those of NBC reporters, but you're left with the same idea. Due to economic and security ties somehow out of its control, the most powerful country in the world is forced to tolerate what's called questionable behavior, a phrase that sweeps together the destruction of Yemen, which the U.S. tolerates with material support, including weapons and targeting instructions, the beheading of dissidents, the disappearing of women drivers, and the brutal murder of Khashoggi. The theme was echoed at Vox, where readers learned that, quote, the realities of Cold War politics got us involved in a deep long-term cooperation with a Saudi state that is not otherwise a natural partner for the United States, close quote. Never mind that the U.S.-Saudi partnership predates the Cold War by about 15 years, Johnson writes. The idea that dictators or sectarian regimes in the Mideast aren't natural partners of the U.S. is simply fiction. It's refreshing that some are starting to challenge the United States' grotesque alliance with the Saudi theocratic monarchy, but with this should come questioning of the reassuring narrative that the Saudis have corrupted, played, or captured an otherwise benevolent, values-based U.S. government. Sadly, but historically, the U.S. hasn't embraced despotic regimes despite their oppressive nature, but because of it. USA Today's October 25th front page headline read, Is the Second Amendment under fire in the West? The online headline, Gun Rights Under Siege, was no less dramatic, before going on to explain the actual subject of the story. Recreational shooting on public lands in West has officials struggling to balance sport versus safety. So yes, the story has nothing to do with the right to bear arms, whether that means participation in a militia, the Supreme Court's traditional interpretation, or a private right to own firearms, as a 2008 ruling written by Antonin Scalia reinterpreted it. The words Second Amendment don't appear in the body of the USA Today piece because the Bill of Rights isn't relevant to the topic at hand, which is that, quote, all across the West, federal and state land managers are struggling to balance the demands of recreational shooters with the fear that their bullets are starting fires, frightening other land users, and accidentally killing others, close quote. Nothing in the Second Amendment suggests that people have a right to shoot off guns wherever they want to, which is presumably why reporter Trevor Hughes doesn't refer to it. But editors who write headlines maybe thought safety concerns wouldn't drive as many clicks as a culture war bid about gun rights, despite the fact that the people most likely to get excited about such headlines are also likely to take phrases like under fire and under siege rather literally. And finally, the New York Times released news that the Department of Health and Human Services is seeking to force government agencies charged with enforcing civil rights law to adopt a definition of sex as either male or female, unchangeable, and determined by the genitals that a person is born with any dispute to be clarified using genetic testing. As Caitlin Burns, to her own knowledge, the only openly transgender Capitol Hill reporter, wrote for Rewire.news, this policy change was enabled by media accounts that frame transgender issues as a debate, even though losing means the loss of human rights for trans people. For me, Burns wrote, quote, "The most frustrating part of the media coverage of the memo is the overly simplistic idea that these policies merely invalidate trans feelings," close quote, when in fact it's a material issue about the ability of trans people to obtain identification that doesn't disclose their medical history. Author and law professor Dean Spade, in a piece for Truthout, adds that, quote, "When transphobia gets bolstered by signals from the federal government, low-level enforcers of gender norms feel even more licensed to humiliate and exclude trans people," close quote. And this means things like having welfare benefits terminated, as a trans woman did when she showed up at her mandatory workfare assignment because the supervisor marked her as absent, saying she wasn't work-ready if she dressed as a woman, or being denied placement in domestic violence shelters or in drug treatment programs because of the way gender markers are recorded on IDs and used to divide folks up in sex-segregated facilities. It matters more for the disproportionate number of trans people who are poor and of color, whose survival is more likely at the mercy of bureaucrats and low-level staff in prisons, hospitals, and group homes who make decisions about gender. Spade says we need to see this White House attack as part of a broader and terrifying approach to race, gender, and authority. So, while you knew what the New York Times was getting at with their October 21st headline, "Transgender could be defined out of existence under Trump administration," given what's at stake, a less artful and more straightforward shorthand, Trump plans to encourage abuse and discrimination against transgender people, might have been more appropriate. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR.